Welcome to the Speaker's Corner Show. This week's show was recorded at my own meeting on the 3rd of January 2010. You can visit our website at speakerscorner.net, or you can tune in every Friday at 2:30 p.m. or every Sunday at 4:30 p.m. to our show on 104.4 Resonance FM. Anyway, what were we going to say?
Venezuela. Will it be crushed?
Well, I mean, you're wandering into the realm of speculation. I don't think necessarily it has to be crushed. I think some people pose the question as if the dilemma in Venezuela is an immediate threat of counter-revolution or successful revolution. But I know people in the Marxist movement have claimed that for the best part of at least 6 years, and it simply hasn't been the case that the issue had to be resolved that rapidly, primarily because this is a country based on oil, and with the oil money it is possible to ameliorate crises which come up by spending oil money of today or borrowing money on the basis of that oil for using for social programs and so on. So for the time being, I don't think that there is an urgent crisis inside Venezuelan society which would lead to an either-or situation immediately. That is not the case in some other countries in Latin America, where they don't have so many resources. So it's really a case that they can always draw from this pot of gold, you see, and ameliorate crisis temporarily. Having said that, there is quite a sharp political crisis as a result of a certain disillusionment with a lot of talk and not so much action in terms of the living standards of the masses. So that's the best answer I can give to that. I can't give a categorical answer. I know a lot of people who would like to give categorical answers, but they've been proven wrong over the past 6 years. And so if you're proven wrong consistently, it's somewhat futile to constantly claim the same thing again and again and again. Wouldn't one say?
Yes. Well, Chavez is a dictator. Well, that's what it boils down to.
I don't think there's any evidence for that.
Oh, I think there is.
Which is based on what?
I think if you ask Venezuelans, you find there's plenty of evidence for it.
If you ask Venezuelans, you're going to get different opinions from different people.
If you ask a lot of Venezuelans.
Right. But was he elected president?
No, not fairly. He was elected through a distorted election, a bit like Robert Mugabe.
A bit like England, in fact.
How many times was Chavez and his government elected?
The first time he was elected, genuinely.
Roughly how many times?
But after that, the second
roughly
time,
how many times?
Twice.
Roughly how many times? Twice. You obviously know nothing about what you're talking about.
Yes, I do.
It's difficult to engage in a discussion with someone who simply comes with a label.
Instead of
knowing the data or the information about which he wishes to talk.
The exact number of times doesn't make any difference.
When you're coming to me with this prejudice,
the last election was rigged.
And the way in which you're discussing indicates that you're not even interested in discussing the substance of the issue.
And how long have you spent in Venezuela?
Proclaim that man is a dictator. No evidence required.
Yes, he is.
It was a dodgy election. No evidence required.
Yeah, you don't.
The fact of the matter is, anybody here.
If you knew Venezuelan people, you'd know there's plenty of evidence.
I know Venezuelan people. There are
Why were all the radio stations being closed down then?
Where did you get that from?
Yeah, in the paper.
Well, what paper?
Times.
When did you read that?
About 6 months ago.
Six
the last
months ago. All the radio stations.
The last opposition radio station.
The last opposition radio station was closed down. My friend, you know nothing.
That's easy to say.
The privately owned radio station. For a start, it's not radio stations that were closed down. It's television stations closed down. But never mind.
Why is
television,
that,
radio, same things. Transmission.
Why is that? Then?
There was a television station closed down.
There were a lot of
television stations
closed down.
The television station that was closed down was involved in instigating a coup d'etat against the government of Venezuela. That wasn't the reason why its license was revoked, however. Nevertheless, there are...
That's what Stalin said in the 30s.
No, Stalin didn't have a television station. See, the problem is, you see, your methodology of argumentation
is based on prejudice, not on fact.
Now, if you want to argue about some viewpoints you've got,
I'm quite happy to discuss those viewpoints.
But if you want to simply argue about mythologies that you pick up and adopt willy-nilly
and throw at me
at Speaker's Corner, it's a waste of time talking to you.
How can a country that produces oil run out of petrol?
Depending upon speculative activity. If people speculate on resources, then it's difficult to get access to those resources.
No, the government controls the oil in Venezuela.
Right, but if there's speculation on those resources...
How can it be speculation?
If there is speculation...
Well, there isn't speculation, is there? The government controls the oil industry.
So that doesn't answer this gentleman's question at all. For example, if you set the prices of goods at an extremely low level, and in other areas of the country, or in certain places on border areas, you can sell those goods at a higher price than what the fixed price is, then there is scope for a black market to develop. Now, I don't know the specifics of what you're talking about. You asked me a generic question, and I'm answering it in a generic sense. For example, I was just told yesterday by my brother who worked in Nigeria, that in Nigeria, they reckon have what shortages of oil, of petrol, and also shortages of electricity, which is connected together. And yet, you know, this is a country rich in oil.
How is that possible?
You haven't answered the question at all.
It's perfectly possible, in the same sense as you can understand, that you can have empty buildings like that one over there, and in front of the building you've got people sleeping on the streets. It's not so difficult to understand that there's a discrepancy between the structure of the organisation of the economy and the needs of the population. Quite often, or generally, the needs of the population are not the primary objective of economic policy. And therefore, you can have all sorts of discrepancies. Shortages on the one side, prices too high for people on the other side, people who are homeless in front of empty buildings, producers of food not having any food to feed themselves. For example, Argentina, something like a third of the population live in poverty, and yet the country produces enough food to feed 14 countries. And so you get an idea about the contradictions between the nature of the economic system that we live under and the requirements that the population have in relation to economy. So these are the contradictions of capitalism itself.
That doesn't really answer what he's asking you, does it?
It does answer.
And
How come the
water shortages, even in Caracas, you only get water for 3 hours a day.
Well, we're back on Caracas.
You only get electricity for a certain amount of days. He was asking you about Venezuela, so I'm continuing the same question.
How come what?
There's water shortages, electricity shortages, oil shortages, yet there's plenty of money to buy.
Where did you get that from?
Oh, from people that live there. Is that all right? Is that enough proof for
no,
you?
No, it's not proof.
Oh, I see. So they know, you know more than they do, do you?
Well, I haven't heard of it. Doesn't mean it's not true. I simply haven't heard of it.
I can assure
you. But that doesn't mean it's not true, right? However, the issue about why there are shortages in various countries at various times
is not various
the issue
countries.
I addressed. For example, there is a building over there on the corner.
Do we have to go through
next
that?
The red building there. That building has been empty for 25 years since I started speaking at Speaker's Corner. There have always been people sleeping in the passageway between this side of Hyde Park and the road across
and
there.
Probably always
Therefore, helping. If someone asks you the question, why are there empty buildings and homeless people, you have to come up with an answer, right?
I tried to explain what the answer is
in relation to the structure of economy. Because capitalism requires that goods are sold at a profit.
No, that's just soundbite.
Now, under the Venezuelan system, there are circumstances where the government has introduced price controls, and price controls have resulted in shortages of goods. Because if, for example, you set the price, as in the Soviet Union or as in Cuba,
exactly, this is what I was saying.
Let me tell you something.
There is something that We have seen in Chile, in South America, in Argentina, in Venezuela now, every country in South America or Latin America that wants to become a little more free than what they have been. The upper classes of the society that controls production make shortage of whatever they can make. In 1975, we have a government that was Perón, and there was the production, the people that have the key of the production in the country make such a shortage that it was impossible for you to get a paper for the clothes, for the water clothes. So all the Argentines were working with a dirty ass because of the government, of the country, of the people that make the shortage for the government.
There is, in Venezuela,
I have lived in Venezuela. The people there, the upper classes, says, here we are 18 millions. Well, we need money just for 4 millions. The other, they are garbage. They live in the mountains. It doesn't matter. I have seen the boys naked until they are 11 or 12 in the country in Venezuela. Now that is changing. Of course, the people that is the owner of that building, they don't like that. Well, I'm sorry for all of that.
I 100% agree with you. The issue about shortages on the one side, particularly in Venezuela, is this speculative operation and also sabotage organized by the ruling classes who still exist in Venezuela.
Right, classes.
The other side, of course, to it is that capitalism itself goes through periodic phases of expansion and contraction determined by the investment cycle of capitalism. Capitalism invests only for a profit. They invest for the maximization of profit. And when the profit rate declines over a long period of time, generally cycles last about 16, 18 years of up and down phases in under capitalism of the investment cycle, as the profit rate declines, so they go on a capital strike. This is what we've got today.
I agree with you. A capital strike
where they withdraw investment from society, and therefore as new people come into the labor force and as older companies go to the wall, they no longer invest the requisite economic investments to produce employment for the general population. And therefore you get a period of economic contraction like we've seen in the last year and a half, in which the economy gradually the prices of investment costs begin to fall. You begin to get a fall in house prices. You begin to get a fall in the cost of equipment and machinery because there's a surplus of the goods available. As there is also a surplus of labour available. So you begin to get a decline in the rate of payment of wages for workers. As they push down wages and the price of raw materials and investment equipment declines, slowly they begin to reinvest. But the likelihood is at the moment that the reinvestment cycle will last for a couple of years and then it will go down again. Because the price of commodities is still too high for the price of machinery is still too high for profitable investment to take off on a long phase of development again.
I agree with you that companies from America, from England and France and European countries go to underdeveloped countries to get richness. But that richness, I agree with you, they don't put it again to produce labor in those countries. They bring that richness to here, to England, to now. So you, because you are British born, I, as an South American, consider you a pirate, a thief of the richness of our countries.
It's the very nature of capitalism, in particular of
imperialism. You enjoy capitalism because you live here.
I don't particularly enjoy capitalism, but I live in a society I'm born into. And the society I'm born into, I make an effort like other people around the world, whether in Argentina or in South Africa or in, you know, Japan,
Europeans
to oppose the structure of that system.
America.
You can live in as much poverty in Britain as in many other countries of the world. There are millions of people who do live in poverty in Britain. Poverty is also, however, is a relative question. in many circumstances, there is absolute poverty, in other words, starvation sort, and then there's the relative poverty. In Britain, we are at present suffering from a sharp transformation towards massive increase in relative poverty. Last week, there was a report done. They said 500,000 people between 34 and 45 have moved back with their mum. So the condition which used to exist 20 years ago, where people felt a more greater freedom, a greater independence, is declining to the point where even 34 to 45 year olds go back to live with their mums. And as for 24 to 35 year olds, I believe the figure was, correct me if I'm wrong, it was in the newspapers the other day, 1 million people, I think, have gone back to live with their mum, or stayed living with their mum or their dad. And so you get a transformation in the psychology.
Happy New Year,
connected.
How are you, my friend?
I'm happy. I can get golden decades. Brown before 9 o'clock.
So you get a transformation in the living conditions, the real living conditions, not only economically, but also socially and psychologically, the conditions change. That change creates the foundation, gradually and imperceptibly sometimes, for an explosion of discontent to break into the surface. But that's not the moment. At the moment, we've got an economic contraction, and the economic contraction will tend towards people becoming passive, isolated, atomized, and gradually, only over time, obviously with interconnection, intercommunication with the internet and so on, it's speeded up the process. Over time, people acquire a certain density of psychology about what is wrong, and then begin to act on the basis of that. In Argentina, it was, what was it? In Argentina, 2001, people go to the cash point machine, nothing comes out. And it was at that point that it began to be an explosion of discontent. In 2000, was it 2001? Explosion of discontent in Argentina.
2001. On 2001, we were starving because of you, of the Monetary International Fund. Okay. That you are English, you support the Monetary International Fund. Although your rents are there.
You must distinguish.
You live, enjoy, eat of what Europeans steal on all undeveloped countries.
Yeah, but you must distinguish between the ordinary people in Britain.
The pirates, Morgan and Red Face. It's not distinguished. It's the same thing.
What did you say?
That is undistinguished. Is even the pirate Morgan, Mr. Blair, or Mrs. Thatcher. It's the same thing.
That I can agree with.
The best English tradition is that.
That doesn't make the general population of Britain responsible for what Argentina suffers. That would be foolish.
No.
You must distinguish.
Not because the after population. All, Argentina. The people that you choose as Americans choose twice, Mr. Woods.
Who says we choose them? They themselves, as your leaders, they themselves are generally selected by an apparatus connected to the wealthy and powerful bankers and capitalists and landowners who control the actual wealth of society. And control thereby the political processes, the parties, the mass media, the education system, the army, the police force, the judiciary, and thereby tell you, here, you can elect these
and
puppets.
We know who teach that to them. You, the English, teach our people that.
I heard you.
How many did you kill?
I heard you. That's connected
how
with the question.
How many did the British Empire kill?
Is that connected with the question we were discussing?
How many did Britain kill? How many did you kill in Northern Ireland?
Did you hear me
say
something?
How many did you kill in Ireland?
I don't know.
You don't know the answer?
I don't know what the answer is. Tell me what the answer is.
You have to stick up for Stalin.
I don't know. I haven't been around.
Stalin was an idiot.
All my studies, Stalin was an idiot.
How many did he kill?
I don't know how many.
How many did he kill?
You tell me. I don't know.
How many did Mao kill?
Tell me.
Tell me how you can be a socialist and not know the answer to that.
Because knowing the answer to statistical questions.
Liar.
Like the BBC.
How many?
You're worse than America. Bosnia's cheaper than USA. The bigger liars.
You don't know the answer.
My friend.
The world's biggest liar.
Look, don't run away. What are you, an intellectual coward?
70 million.
Are you an intellectual coward?
70 million. No, you are. You are.
Stand where you are and let me answer. Stand where you are. Don't run away like a child shouting something out and then run away. Why can't you cope with someone answering you? With someone answering you, you intellectual coward.
Yankee shit maker, Golden Brown.
Now, the gentleman claims, or claimed, that under Mao, he says, not just under Mao, he says, killed 70 million people. Now, I don't know what the statistic is about how many people died under the regime of Mao Zedong from 1949 to 1976. I don't know how many people died at that time. I don't think anybody knows. There are various claims made, which I think vary between 20 million and 70 million. People died as a result of a whole number of factors. One of the factors which you could attribute to Mao Zedong would be policies which result as a consequence of mistaken policies, policies which result in famine, and policies of brutality. Now, policies of brutality would tend to be connected with what they consider to be anti-government forces attacking them, or during the Cultural Revolution, processes of attacks on what they consider to be opponents, which could be quite widespread groups of people. I don't know what the data in relation to, well, there's what's called periods of class struggle against the landlords, which, how many people died in that, I don't know. I doubt very much it reaches into the millions. I think you'll discover that the figures of millions of people being killed in China are connected with the Great Leap Forward, with collectivization, and with economic disasters associated with that process, in particular 1957, 1961. I think you'll find that's when most of the deaths attributed to Mao Zedong took place. Now, if you wish to analyze that, fair enough. And you wish to blame Mao Zedong for that, also fair enough. On the other side, it also means that if you are saying that famines that are not necessary and that are caused by mistaken policies result in millions of deaths, and therefore the ruler of the country is responsible for that, then you also have to place Great Britain and the rulers of Britain in the same category as Mao Zedong, because they starved tens of millions of people in India from the 1850s onwards, and even in the Second World War, 1942-3, 3 million to 4 million people died as a result of the export of food from West Bengal to supply British forces during the Second World War. So you cannot simply extrapolate one set of data about one dictator somewhere in the world and then throw that up like the gentleman there did as an argument against myself. One, because I'm not a Maoist. Two, I've never supported Mao Zedong. And three, because you have to analyse the comparative relationship between one type of death in one part of the world and a type of death in another part of the world.
Oh, but you can show communality.
You can do that.
Of course, I would say, look, so what is the cause of the big famines that I can think of? One is the Russian collectivisation.
Yes.
Standing for products.
That's correct, yes.
Obviously, Mao Zedong and the collectivisation there.
Yeah.
Collectivisation is in Africa. I was thinking of maybe Abyssinia or Ethiopia, as I like to call it. All of these were actually gigantic Russians.
That's true. I've never disputed that.
And socialists still go in for it, and they don't have the bother to go and do their staff work, do their calculations, and do it properly.
Well, the process of collectivisation,
and
essentially,
what's happening in Venezuela?
1 minute. The process at the moment.
Yes, I can tell you this.
There is no mass collectivisation program in Venezuela.
There is, but there is a direction of the growing of
the products. There is a promotion of collective ownership or collective farming, cooperative farming, by the government. There's a promotion of that. and there is the occupation of unused lands. That's not the same thing as mass collectivization that took place in the Soviet Union or China.
Let me try and
nobody's starving as a consequence. Right? So we're hardly dealing with a similar phenomenon. We can, however, analyze what happened in the Soviet Union or in China and see what was wrong with what they did and what was the characteristic of what they were doing. When they collectivized the land in China and in the Soviet Union, it was a forced collectivization. What was the purpose of the forced collectivization? To acquire resources from the peasantry, from pre-capitalist and pre-socialist economic formations, in order to acquire capital to industrialize the society. That was the theoretical foundation and the practical reason for doing what they did. They did it in a way, sudden, immediate, forced collectivization, which is completely negative for the development of society, and which held back agriculture in China and in the Soviet Union for decades. I'm not disputing that. It also resulted in millions of deaths. I'm not disputing that. The problem is, when you get people who come up and shout at you, simply want a statistical victory by shouting something out at me, without even engaging in a discussion about the questions. So what is what, but again, if we analyze forced collectivization, what is the parallel process that took place in Britain? The enclosures. What was that? The seizure of land by the capitalist in order to acquire capital, in order to industrialize. And the industrialized countries then impose their structure of power over the rest of the world, which was the question that the Argentinian was addressing earlier on. And so you have to understand the origins and connections between these things, and how collectivization in either a capitalist form, collectivization in the hands of the capitalists or capitalist landlords, or in a Stalinist form, mass collectivization supposedly into the hands of the state of minuscule peasant lots, that those processes both in many ways were negative for the development of society. The way they took place was negative rather than the fact they took place. On the other side, I agree that in order to establish socialism, you acquire large-scale agriculture and industrial agriculture to be able to meet the needs of the urban population as it develops. Now, in China or in Russia, the way they should have done that, and that's what the Marxists of my own orientation argue, is that the way that should have been done is gradually and slowly by example, not forcibly and suddenly by diktat.
That was the Speaker's Corner show for this week. Come down to Speaker's Corner any Sunday afternoon and join us to speak, listen or discuss. Tune in every Friday at 2:30 p.m. on 104.4 Resonance FM, or visit our website, speakerscorner.net. That's speakerscorner.net.